Welcome to Torah Talk, a program that challenges 2,000 years of misunderstanding and neglect of the Torah, God's law. In this show, we will be threshing ideologies by examining these scriptures in their Hebraic contexts. Our goal is to separate the wheat from the chaff, the truth from misconception. This program is sponsored by The Harvest, a Messianic charismatic congregation in Thornton, Colorado.
Shalom, lovers of the Torah, and thank you for choosing to listen to Torah Talk. We have a great show for you today. We'll be talking about the prophet Isaiah and the Gentiles and the Sabbath. This is an interesting show, a controversial passage found in chapter 56 of the book of Isaiah, which raises some important issues and some really kind of, I'll tell you, they're very complex, very hard to sort out, but a set of scriptures, especially in relationship to the Gentiles, to Christians, and this big issue of worship days. So we're going to jump into this today, but before I get started, I want to welcome into the studio my co-host, Pastor Russ, and Torah teacher, BJ. How are you both doing? And, what do you think of this topic? And I say that in light of the fact that we've spent a good chunk of our morning just trying to sort out what we think and feel about Isaiah 56. And we've spent the bulk of our time, more than we've ever had on any other show, just trying to sort out what it is that we think this is all about. But what do you guys think?
Well, I'm excited and, you know, slightly exhausted, but really excited because I love a topic where it is that three Torah observant believers are midrashing. I'm not going to say fighting or arguing because that's not what we were doing, but we're throwing the ball back and forth, that we do that for 2 hours and then we can't, you know, I can't figure out why it is that the church disagrees with me, where we agree 98% of the time and we're still fighting back and forth. But
yes,
it's an exciting thing for me. And I love the topics where it is that we know these are the things that we're going to hear, the difficult questions that the church or the believer is going to throw at us of why we do what we do. And so I've enjoyed it and I'm excited to see where we end up.
You know, I'm surprised that we even have time to do the show today. It's going to be a shorter show just because we've spent so much time, but I know it's going to be a good show because we're sitting here on some beautiful leather couches in the studio to do this show. And when I see BJ fling herself to one side of the leather couch and just kind of like let out a big sigh and close her eyes and just go into this zone of silence and angst, I think, wow, it's going to be a good show because we're all somewhat off kilter in terms of the implications of this passage. And it's troubling in different ways on different levels. And so I'm sure as we get into the show, this will become more and more obvious. And, BJ, you can't throw yourself around because you got to sit by the mic.
I understand, but it might come as a surprise to you. I'm a little melodramatic sometime, and I do the – there was no way else for me to explain how I was feeling than just do the hand to the forehead and do my fall.
Yes, that's good. That's good. Great. All right. Pastor Russ.
Well, I'm extremely excited to be here, and I think the best way to put it is I felt like I was knocked off my horse just in our dialogue, our midrash this morning, and – looking at the scriptures, it's amazing. It truly is a living word that things will speak to you as you grow in your knowledge and love of the Lord. Things come out that you've never seen before, and there are some incredibly powerful and profound things in Isaiah 56 that we are definitely wrestling through.
Yes. So our show, Torah Talk, really is a show that's designed to challenge 2,000 years of misunderstanding and neglect in the body of Messiah. In relationship to the Torah. And so I think, you know, as a body of believers, the church as an institution, by and large, is somewhat unfamiliar and uncomfortable with the Torah. And yet we believe that the Torah is, in fact, the bedrock of all the scriptures. And it's out of those first five books that all of the revelation of God unfolds through, of course, the writings and the prophets and then the apostolic scriptures. And the challenge of the church is really to come to terms with this body of literature, this sacred text that has been ignored for almost 2,000 years. And so as we look into these great issues that have been given to us by the Messiah, Yeshua, and the apostles, we see that they are rooted, that they have an antecedent theology that goes all the way back into these early books of Moses. And unless we understand that background, that context, oftentimes we are robbed of all of the benefit and the reward and the glory that comes with that understanding, that background. So we're looking at this big issue, the Gentiles and the Sabbath, or more specifically, the Gentiles and the Torah, the covenant. And what are we going to do about that? That's always been an issue. And by the first century, Judaism's had resolved that by coming up with a ritual conversion in which they would take a Gentile and turning him or her into a Jew by way of the ritual of conversion. And by the first century, salvation became ethnocentric. It was based on ethnicity. And so unless you were ethnically Jewish, you couldn't be saved. That had to be addressed, of course, in Acts 15. But suffice it to say, this man-made ritual of conversion solved the dilemma artificially by turning Gentiles into Jews. And now, as Jews, they could be saved and do the Torah. For 2,000 years, that has been so ingrained within a number of Judaisms that the idea that a Gentile, as a Gentile, could do the Torah is anathema. It's you know, bizarre at least, and tremendously offensive at worst. Gentiles have no business doing the Torah, no business keeping the Shabbat. They need to become Jewish first in order to do that. And so we have Messianic Jewish leaders who carry that baggage from their background. They get born again, but they come in with this idea that only the Jews are given the Torah to live out. And then some of the Messianic Jewish leadership don't even think that it's for the Messianic Jew either, now that they're in Messiah. A lot of confusion. It's just crazy out there. We want to bring some ideas to the table, and we want to make a case that this man-made ritual of conversion really is just artificial, that God had a way of embracing the Gentiles all along. And we can see it early in the Torah, and we can see it later in the prophets, and clearly in the apostolic scriptures, that the Gentiles, as Gentiles, are invited to come into the covenant people and participate in the covenants of promise with believing Jews. And that's just really not popular today to even bring up and discuss, but that's what this show's about. And so we want to address some of these issues because of the great split between Jewish people and Christians, between Jewish believers and Gentile believers. So before we get into this whole issue, I want the audience to understand that this is a midrash. It's not to be construed as a doctrinal statement or a theological treatise on the subject. We're simply wrestling with the passages and the ideas contained therein to better inform ourselves and you as well as listeners. We want to remind you, we reserve the right to change our minds on our ideas as we grow in the grace and knowledge of Messiah. So, right before stepping into Isaiah 56, 1 through 8, BJ, I want you to share with us, share with the audience, your event or whatever you want to call it that transpired here a week or so ago at work. And it kind of helps us to understand how cloudy these issues are in the Jewish mind and the Gentile mind.
I have, you know, I have a string of clientele, and so they vary between Christians, Jews, heathens. You know, I mean, I do accounting for different, I mean, all, you know, businesses of integrity, but not necessarily all believing the same. And one of the clients that I have is a synagogue, and they're very content with you can do your Judaism however it is that you want to do your Judaism. Yeah. They're pretty reformed and fine with that. Unless, of course, you believe in Jesus. And then it's completely, you know, then it's a problem. But we ended up getting into, you know, a disagreement this last week. Again, I'm calling these things midrashes. we had a midrash about whether we could meet on the eighth day of Sukkot. And all three of them in this meeting were completely content with meeting on the eighth day of Sukkot. And I'm the Gentile who is sitting there saying, but I can't meet because that's a holy day. And they said, oh, it's a very insignificant holiday and it's, you know, it's no big deal. And we can absolutely do that. It's not insignificant. God says it'll be perpetual and that we will keep it as an everlasting feast. And you shall do no work on it. I can't do a finance meeting. That's work. Let me tell you, it is work what you're asking me to do. And it was just so interesting to me of, you know,
so the Jewish person is trying to say, no, let's have the meeting. You're the Gentile saying, no, it's a holy day.
Right.
That is just like, that is...
Well, and you know, they're completely content with the three of them not doing it, which, okay, so that's their decision. But then the conversation became, let's convince her that she doesn't have to do it. You know, then it was almost like, I don't know if it was convicting or just frustrating that now we have to explain to you why this is not a big Jewish holiday. And I then pull up my Torah, you know, I go online and I start pulling it up going, well, this is what it is that it says. And, you know, just that whole, I have to fight to be able to practice Judaism or whatever, you know, to practice obedience to the Torah, even when I'm with Jews, you know, I get that I have to fight with it when I'm in the church, that when I have to tell them. But then I had a secular client who they wanted to plan something for Rosh Hashanah. And I said, I can't do that. That's Rosh Hashanah. And they go, great. So then like the Thursday after that or the Tuesday after that, or, you know, they knew they weren't going to fight with me, but the Jews they have to fight with in order to keep obedient to the, you know, it's one of those where I just sit and kind of shake my head of.
Well, it is. And I think it's very complex and at times very confusing. But keep in mind too, that at least in Orthodox Judaism, and there's a few Judaisms that really look at the Torah as being something that's given only to the Jew. And so you have to convert first anyway for that to be relevant to you. So for a Gentile, as a Gentile, to say, no, actually, I'm going to keep the Torah. I'm not going to convert, but I'm going to keep the Torah. That does get somewhat confusing and can be somewhat offensive based on what you embrace as an ideology as it relates to Torah observance. So, but I think that's great. And that's kind of our introduction to this show, because all those issues get raised here with Isaiah 56, 1-8. So I just want to read this passage as we'll look into it in the shows ahead. But Isaiah 56, 1-8 says this: Thus says the Lord, preserve justice, do righteousness, for my salvation is about to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. How blessed is the man who does this, and the son of man who takes hold of it, who keeps from profaning the Sabbath, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Let not the foreigner who has joined himself to the Lord say, the Lord will surely separate me from his people. And then I'm going to skip down to verse 6. Also, the foreigners who join themselves to the Lord to minister to him, and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone who keeps from profaning the Sabbath and holds fast my covenant, even those I will bring to my holy mountain, make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be acceptable on my altar, for my house will be called a house of prayer for all the peoples. The Lord God who gathers the dispersed of Israel declares, yet others I will gather to them, to those already gathered. Wow. Wow. Before we jump into this, I want to come down to, I think it is verse number, let's see, 7. It's the last part of the text. It is one of the most familiar phrases that we have within the church. In fact, I've seen this phrase in a lot of different places, significant places. I was down at the World Prayer Center in Colorado Springs for a retreat. And they have a beautiful, beautiful World Prayer Center that's just gorgeous and these huge windows that you can just look, you can almost touch the mountains that are just right outside because you're right there in Colorado Springs. And just, it is just breathtaking, the scenery and the structure, the prayer center itself is just really an amazing, amazing sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And right emblazoned on the main wall of where you enter into the building at the main entrance is this phrase: "For my house will be called a house of prayer for all peoples." And that's a reference to the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. This is a Jewish prophet prophesying. It's the Lord speaking through him. And the Lord saying, "Hey, my house will be called a house of prayer for all the peoples." They put that on the World Prayer Center. Why? Because the World Prayer Center, for them, it represents this house of prayer for all peoples. In fact, they have all the flags in there of the different nations. Right. They're just all over the place.
Right.
It's a house of prayer for all people. It represents this phrase. It represents this passage. And so I was so struck by that. I thought, wow, that is amazing. Where is that? You know, I looked it up and discovered it's in Isaiah chapter 56. And I thought, I'm going to read that and really grab hold of this and dig into it and get into the context. I want to find out about this phrase, "My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the peoples." So as I'm reading, I'm getting more and more disturbed and uneasy in my chair, because it looks like the all people is not all peoples. This phrase, all the Gentiles, is not all the Gentiles. It's actually all the Gentiles who are in covenant with him and who do not profane the Sabbath. They actually are keeping the Sabbath and holding fast to the covenant. And all of a sudden, I'm sickened as I sat there and thought to myself, if all that's welcome in his house of prayer, if he's saying through Isaiah, the only ones among the nations that I'm going to bring to my holy mountain and into my house of prayer are those who love me and are keeping my Shabbat, then a whole bunch of professed believers may not be the ones that are comprehended in this passage. So I was not very, I wasn't at peace sitting there with that phrase anymore. And I didn't know what to do. But I thought, maybe that's why we just put little parts of phrases up here and there. Because had we put the whole passage up there, maybe we wouldn't have built that building. Or maybe we would have chose an entirely different passage. Maybe the passage that would have worked better would have been "God is love." That's it. Just "God is love." God is love. And you know, that works for everybody at all times in all places, right? But this passage seems to be rooted in this idea that those that are welcome are those that love me and embrace the covenant. And the picture of embracing the covenant is this big, simple commandment of worshiping him on his holy day. Not ours, his Sabbath. Not our Sabbath, his appointed time. Wow. So just, I'm going to open it up for comments, and these are final comments because our show's over, and we'll have to actually begin to exegete this passage at our next show. But final comments on that. Feelings. She's laying down again on the couch. No, she's not. She's sitting here, but
there's just so much to it to have like a final comment on.
I know.
You know, this was actually one of the scriptures that really convinced me to become a Sabbath keeper, because I saw the blessing that came through. I wanted to be in his house of prayer, and I didn't necessarily know exactly what that meant. And I didn't know, exactly what it is that looked like, but I knew that, I knew that there was a blessing that came from that.
Yes.
And that he looked at the person who was keeping from profaning the Sabbath. And I wanted to be that person. And it was really life-changing for me. Even in my ignorance, I was keeping the wrong day, but there was a blessing that came from, it was literally a life-changing verse for me. So I'm excited to spend more time on it.
Yeah, that's great. So that was one of those core passages that began to lead you into this direction of embracing the Shabbat as a day of worship. Wow, that I didn't know that. That's
it was
great.
One of the verses that made me think that, made me understand that Torah wasn't done away with for me. Because when I would look at it and see when he talks about you know, you're a foreigner, I felt very much like a foreigner.
Yes.
And I could see how it was still applicable to me.
Yeah.
Torah became something that was still tangible, attainable, welcome, something that I was either entitled to or allowed to. I didn't know what it all meant, but I knew that when he talked about the foreigner, that suddenly he's talking about the foreigner and the Sabbath. And I went, wait, so I'm the foreigner and yet I'm still supposed to be looking at the Sabbath. Yeah, it was life-changing.
That's great. You know, I'm with you too on this, and I would say that it's true for me. I don't know exactly what it means when he says my holy mountain and my house of prayer. I don't know what that actually represents, but whatever it is, I want it. I'm not sure what it is, but I know I want that, whatever that might be. And I know that that is part of the heritage and inheritance of those who love him and hold fast to his covenant, those who are embracing the Shabbat as a day of worship. Pastor Russ, final comments.
Yeah, just the two things that just really stand out. It says my house should be called the house of prayer. Well, I know what the house of Jesse is. I know what the house of David is. It's the family of those people. It's those people underneath that person that are part of that family. And so when God says my house, I don't really look at this as a physical dwelling. I look at it more as the whole household of God. In other words, my family, my people shall be called a people of prayer. And the qualifier of this people group, having this intimacy level with God, he says those who keep their hand from doing evil, those who embrace the covenant. So he lists two that are just obviously everything, but of all those everything, he picks out twice the Shabbat. I mean, of all the commands, there's you know, don't murder, those, you know, he didn't say those who don't kill, those who don't murder. I mean, Shabbat, it's the one, and he didn't say it once, he says it twice. And we know the Shabbat is Saturday. It's amazing that of all the commands, of every command listed in the entire Bible, he chooses that one, and he drills it home twice to say that these are the people that I'm going to take to my holy mountain. It is. Just,
but that implies that those who don't, he won't take to his holy mountain.
It does imply that. And
it's just like, it's huge. But I do want to come back to this real quick. And you're right. I think the reason he chooses the Sabbath is because the Sabbath is the sign of the covenant. Mm-hmm. Just like a wedding ring is the sign of your marriage covenant.
Right.
And so if you got a wedding ring on, it implies that you're going to fulfill all your vows.
Right.
And so if we keep the Shabbat, it implies that we are going to keep the covenant. Mm-hmm. We're growing in that. We've embraced it. We're growing into it, da-da-da-da-da. But if we don't, if we take the wedding ring off and fling it, we're basically saying, hey, our vows are meaningless to me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's huge. I think he chooses the Shabbat because it's the sign of the covenant. So if you're embracing the Shabbat, it implies that you have embraced the covenant. And that is a big deal. And that's a yes. And so we're going to get into it in the next couple shows, why it's important for Christians who claim to be followers of Jesus should take a hard look at what it means to be faithful to the covenant and what it means to keep the day that's holy to God, to keep the day that Jesus kept.
Right.
Keep the day the Messiah kept. If you're going to follow him, follow him.
Right.
And so we're going to talk about that in weeks to come. Thank you for staying with us, and that concludes our program for this week. A special thanks to our great King, Yeshua the Messiah, our producer and co-host, Pastor Russ, and to our teacher, BJ, our listeners and supporters for making this podcast possible through your prayers and financial giving. I am your host, Torah Teacher Mark, and until next week, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace in the name of the Prince of Peace, Yeshua the Messiah. Shalom.
Torah Talk has been brought to you by The Harvest, a Messianic charismatic congregation located in the North Hills Church of God facility at 8891 Pose Boulevard in Thornton, Colorado. Your host has been Pastor Mark McClellan. Join us for Sabbath services at 1 p.m. next Saturday afternoon. For more information, please call us at 303-761-9948 or visit our website at www.harvest.org. grafteddin, that's GRAFTEDIN.com. God bless you and shalom.